Welcome to Teachers in America, a production of HMH, hosted by our Senior Director of Community Engagement, Noelle Morris. I'm Lish Mitchell. On this episode, we meet Kitty Donahoe, elementary teacher at Roosevelt Elementary School, part of the Santa Monica Malibu Unified School District in Santa Monica, California. Raised in Yosemite Valley, Kitty moved to Los Angeles to attend UCLA, where she received her BA and master's in education. She has looped with her classes for about 20 of the 34 years that she has taught. This means that she is able to teach the same group of students for more than 1 year. While Kitty believes that developing student relationships is the key to successful teaching, she also finds support by surrounding herself with educator friends and experts, both online and at her school. Every year, Kitty attends summer institutes at Columbia University's Teacher College Reading and Writing Project. She is also an alumni fellow of the Kotzen Foundation for the Art of Teaching. A passionate writer, Kitty's debut children's novel is How to Ride a Dragonfly. Now, here are Kitty and Noelle. Good morning, Kitty. How are you? I'm so excited that we're getting this chance to meet.
Good morning, Noelle, and I'm very excited to be here. It's my first podcast that I've ever done. I cannot say enough how excited I am.
First of all, you teach in Santa Monica, which is one of my favorite places in the country.
Come visit. I love
LA, and when I'm out in LA, I love Santa Monica. Did you start your student teaching and you're still in the same district?
That is correct. And my school is only a few blocks away from the beach. It is so beautiful there. And you're right. It's an incredibly amazing place to teach and a beautiful area to live.
In the 30 plus years that you've taught, has anything changed within the district? Have you gotten to just see the community change? I mean, you have that natural beauty of the beach, definitely. But I can imagine over the decades, just the iconic nature of where you live. But tell us a little bit about teaching in that environment, the community, and what you've seen change over the 30 years.
Well, one thing I've noticed about my school district is that it's always embraced creativity and innovation, and I'm really grateful for that. Mm-hmm. And what I really like about our district is a lot of us do the Teachers College Reading and Writing Project, which is led by Lucy Calkins. We use that curriculum. And so they're really ready to try and embrace very progressive curriculum like that, which I love. Something else I love about my school, and it's become even more so, although it always was, is that it's very international. And I have students who either their parents or even themselves were born in another country, albeit I do have a lot of children who were born in California. But I would say at least half of my class, or more than half, have parents that were born in another country. And this is not unusual, what I have this school year. And it adds a really amazing and deep cultural appreciation in our classroom. And we have been doing a lot of work to bring books to the classroom that reflect all students, so they see themselves in their books we read, and they can see other cultures and appreciate that. So I really feel like our district is, I know for sure at my school, really trying hard to raise awareness of not just any one group, so that they see themselves in the books and see other people. And I'm really thrilled to see that going on in our district. And
is there an author? Is there a book that you've discovered that your students are just raving about?
I have to say, last year, I did Zoom teaching for a year. Unlike maybe some teachers, I did not feel alone. I was really lucky. And I had always loved Grace Lynn. And so I read to my students on Zoom Where the Mountain Meets the Moon. And I was so transported. And so were my students by this beautiful book, and we felt that we were no longer in a Zoom classroom, but we were on a journey with a little girl in China and her dragon friend. And the children loved her so much. Usually I try to read different authors, which I did in the picture books, but they were begging me to read more Grace Lynn. So during the pandemic, I ended up reading all three of her books that are companion pieces to each other. And one of the lines, I'm going to paraphrase it, in the book, When the Sea Turned to Silver, the grandmother is in prison. The grandmother in the book is a storyteller, and she's thrown in prison, and her granddaughter goes on a quest to rescue her. And there's somebody else in prison with the grandmother, and he finds out that she's a storyteller. And he says, when you are in prison with the storyteller, you are not in prison at all. And it really made me think about the metaphor of how even though so many teachers and children all over the world might have felt really stymied by the fact that we were on Zoom school and we couldn't go and do things that we normally did, the fact that we had stories to transport us made us feel that, just like in that beautiful metaphor in her book, we weren't in prison. Our stories let us travel everywhere. So I feel like Grace Lynn got myself and my class through Zoom teaching last year, and I'm forever grateful for that.
Oh, I'm going to take that memory to heart, and I'm definitely going to unpack that quote for myself and the work that I do. So thank you so much for sharing that. Kitty, do you come from a family of teachers?
That is a really good question. I have a very interesting family background. My great-grandparents immigrated from Ireland in the late 1800s, and they homesteaded in Yosemite National Park before it was a national park. And there were seven children, and even though they were in the wilderness, they made sure that every single one of them, both the men and the women in the family, got a college education. There was a real love of education in my family, and both of my sisters have done teaching, and I'm just not surprised I became a teacher because education and language was always really valued in my family, Noelle.
I'm now trying to picture family photographs of homesteading in Yosemite Park. Do you, on the side of education too, do you have a love of nature and exploring and outdoors just in because of where your family started here?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, we have we spoke about how beautiful Santa Monica is. Mm-hmm. And of course, coming from Yosemite, I was given such an appreciation for nature. So we do have a beautiful patio that goes onto a grassy area. So I have a front door and a back door into my classroom. And we have a classroom garden. Sadly, with the pandemic, it's gotten a little bit frumpy looking, but I have good intentions to bring it back to its former grandeur. But we are able, because of the beautiful weather, to go inside and outside a lot. And another author who I love is Robert McFarland. And Jackie Morris is the illustrator. There's a book called The Lost Words, and they're both from England. And this book took into account that so many words of nature were missing from the lexicon, and they were being replaced by a lot of technological words. Mm. So they did this beautiful poetry book to celebrate nature, and some of the profits would go to natural causes. And in the spring, because I loop for 2 years, I have my students for second and third grade, I use that as a mentor text and have the children write nature poetry and really celebrate the natural world. So that's a lot of work that I do in the springtime with my students.
I want to go back and pick up something that you said, because I think it's important for teachers to do this. You described your garden as frumpy, but you have good intentions of bringing it back. Kitty, that's so important to keep that front of mind, because we have a lot going on as teachers. And I think sometimes we're always inadvertently putting more pressure on ourselves versus putting it out there that I see it, I know that needs some work, and I have intentions to do that, and here's when, versus allowing yourself to just keep looking at that garden
as a reflection of something that you're not doing right. How do you keep such a fresh perspective on yourself and what's happening in the environment?
That is a really good question, Noelle, and something I've thought about a lot. And there's another book I've read by Sarah K. Ahmed, and it's Being the Change, Strategies to Teach Social Comprehension. And she had given a talk at Teachers College Reading and Writing Project one time where she said, when life hands you a curriculum, and obviously when the pandemic hit, that was the curriculum. And, you know, I've heard this from so many educators I admire. The children are the curriculum. Where they are and what their needs are, that is the curriculum. And it's true, teachers do have a lot foisted upon them. And I think what helps me is to always keep my eye on the students. And I have to say, even in the height of the pandemic, before I was vaccinated and when we were all on Zoom school, but that time every day when I was with my second graders, now third graders, I forgot there was a pandemic because their little faces were right in front of me. And one thing that has never changed with all the ups and downs in education is that I love the children so much. And if I put my focus on them, and as I said, they are the curriculum, and what are their needs, then it all falls into place. Because you're right, with my garden, I just love going out there with the students or even by myself to think a little bit when it's lunchtime or something. And it, you could say it is a little reflective of our times. We're just trying so hard to get a balance after everything all of us have been through. And I'm so grateful to be in person with the students again. That is, it's just so edifying. I can't even begin to say it. So I really think if we always, as teachers, I know for myself, think about the kids, they bring so much joy to my life. And that has never, ever stopped. It's never any stressors in education. It's not the children. And I can honestly say that.
I never got to loop, but I'm fascinated by the concept of looping.
It's amazing.
Talk to us about that. I know it's a concept that teachers understand, but walk us through your process of getting your second grade class and taking them through third grade.
Certainly. And you know, I've been teaching for over 3 decades, and I would say more than 2/3 of that time I've been looping between second and third grade. I did loop between first and second grade one time also. And it's really remarkable because being a teacher and working with people, there's nothing more important than the relationships you build. And it doesn't matter what you want to teach the students. If you do not build rapport and relationship with the students, and I teach very young children and their families, you're not going to accomplish anything. And so that for me is the most important thing, is from the get-go to build relationships and to make them feel safe and loved and to let the parents know that I will take care of their children for the 2 years they have me. And at the beginning of second grade, there's so little and there's a lot to build. It's like building a community. I'm building a proverbial house or something to hold these children for 2 years. And there's a lot of organization and routines to be taught. But underneath all of that is the idea of building community and letting the kids know you're there for them. But it's a fine line because at the same time, you need to keep the discipline. So I think the best way to do that is to stay calm and to be firm. It's funny because my best friend, who I've grown up with my whole life, said, I just can't imagine you being strict because I have a sweet demeanor. I said, oh, yes, I can, because I'll pay the price for 2 years if I'm not.
Right. That's not a catch up you want to experience. I'll take a.
You've got to lay down the law, but in a nice way.
Yep. So you had your second graders last year. You met them and it was...
I met them on Zoom.
Zoom.
I literally met them on Zoom.
What was the experience like when you finally got to meet them and they got to meet you in person?
You know, it was really interesting because when you just see their head in a little square all day, and then you see them in person, some of the kids, this is really funny, I thought they were these little tiny little things. And then they came in person and they were almost as tall as me. I have a couple of unusually tall kids. And then there were other kids who I thought were really tall. I don't know why. It's just the image I had. And they were tiny. So one thing is physically, it didn't always jive with what I had perceived or I had imagined. Especially this year, because last year it was so lovely to meet them in person, but it was much stricter about distancing. And I think all of us were nervous going back in person. I'm sure the parents were and the children, because COVID is such an ever-changing beast. Mm-hmm. I feel like this year it's been wonderful because I know the kids and we're able to do things, I think. It's not lax because my school has amazing structures in place. We're tested every week. All the staff has to be vaccinated. My little ones are too little to be vaccinated. But I just feel like there's more ease with everything. You know, we're more familiar with COVID. There's a lot of things in place for protection. And so seeing them, and it's wonderful. It is just absolutely wonderful. On the one hand, Zoom school wasn't my favorite, but because I had such great kids and I got to see them, it was great. But nothing beats being in person with them. Nothing.
When we think about the importance of what conversations are happening about interrupted learning, learning gaps, the urgency of reading by third grade, what are you doing as a teacher and what conversations have you been having at your school? And actually, what are some of the things you've put in motion for this school year?
We're very privileged at Roosevelt where I teach. We're a project school of Teachers College Reading and Writing Project, which is part of Columbia University. And we have staff developers come and work with all of us at the school. And this has been going on, I want to say 8 years at our school, but many of us, including myself, have been doing coursework with the Reading and Writing Project at Teachers College for years, even before we were a project school. And they come and help us with the latest research and ideas for teaching reading and writing. And I believe this to my core. The best thing to get kids to be reading is put books in their hands of what they want to read. So I don't even have room in my classroom for all the books I have. They're just spread all over my room around the perimeter, and they're smashed and stuffed into cupboards. And I'm just always trying to find books that I think the kids will like and go from there. Because if someone had handed me a book about, I don't know, lima beans, which I hated as a kid, I certainly would not have wanted to read that. So I think you have to start with trying to find what their interests are. And then, of course, you do all the other things in balanced literacy, the phonics, the shared reading, interactive read alouds, all of those things. But I really think you have to go where their interests are. Some kids just love, love, love nonfiction, and they may not like fiction as much. Of course, it's important to expose children to all kinds of genres, but I think you really need to have a ready supply of books that they will like. So I'm always getting grants or parents donate, or like many teachers, I just spend money on buying books out of my own pocket for kids. But I think that's the key. And I also think that it's so important to look at this from a positive spin. What have the kids learned during the pandemic? And this is something they talked a lot about at Teachers College. They've learned things that they would have never learned if they hadn't gone through a pandemic. Come on, they had to learn how to get along with everyone in a small space. That's a huge skill. and all sorts of life skills. You know, my school is unique and wonderful, so I can't speak for all schools across America, but I feel that the teachers at my school really, really did a remarkable job educating the children during the pandemic. So anyway, maybe I gave you too much there, but there
no.
you go.
No, because earlier in our conversation, you talked about children are the curriculum.
Yes.
I do want to ask one follow-up question. What have you noticed that they learned during the pandemic that surprised you?
I am always surprised, but I think I always knew this, but how resilient they are. They have been through so much this past year, yet they're coming to school so eager to learn. And the parents are so kind and have been so supportive. So I think I never cease to be surprised by how resilient children are.
Hey, teacher friends, I want to introduce you to Innovation for Equity, a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting innovative ways to improve life outcomes for Black learners of all ages. Subscribe to Innovation for Equity on YouTube to get the facts and stay informed with IFE Quick Conversations. Hear from education industry leaders like Atlanta Public School Superintendent Dr. Lisa Herring on topics like school reopening and recovery. Learn more about the impact of culturally responsive education in the classroom and gain insights about education investing. IFE Quick Conversations are powered by Innovation for Equity and sponsored by HMH. Now, back to the episode. You're a writer. You're not just fascinated by writing and reading, but you are contributing to that. So my understanding is you have a new book that's going to be coming out, or your first book?
Yes, and this is a dream come true, because when I was a little girl, my mom said that I always wanted to be a teacher, but I also wanted to be a writer and an illustrator. And I used to spend hours every day just entertaining myself, drawing pictures and telling stories about the characters I was making up. And I've been teaching over 3 decades. And at the same time, I've been taking so many classes at UCLA Extension, taking writing courses about writing for children. I've attended many institutes at Teachers College Reading and Writing Project, funded by the Coatson Foundation for the Art of Teaching, which has also really helped me a lot. And so just kept submitting manuscripts and getting rejections and trying to balance being a writer at the same time as being a full-time teacher. And I can't do anything halfway, because I felt I could never give short shrift to my classroom. So I would try to write either after work, early morning, or on weekends, and a lot more in the summer. And I have the most amazing agent. His name is Steve Frazier with a Jennifer DiChiara Literary Agency. And he has been representing me for about 12 years, and he kept submitting. And they would always say things like, "We really like Kitty's writing, but we have another book on our list on the same topic." So about 2.5 years ago, I wrote this story called How to Ride a Dragonfly. And I think a lot of it was based on growing up in nature in Yosemite. And I've always loved magical experiences. And it's about a little girl. I didn't even say actually if it was a boy or girl, but the illustrator made it a girl. And I didn't illustrate it. And she shrinks and has an adventure on a dragonfly. And I sent it to Steve and I said, "I don't know. I wrote this, and what do you think?" And he got right back to me, said, "I'm sending it to the 3 best editors I know." And this is crazy, because I've been submitting either with an agent or without an agent for years. 2 days later, Ann Schwartz, who has her own print imprint, Ann Schwartz Books at Random House, gets back to him and says, "Could she make a couple of changes? I really like it. I think she's really talented." I said, "Of course I could. What do you think?" So I banished my husband out of the, you know, room where I write. And I said, "Don't interrupt me at all." And he's so nice, my husband. And so I just all night worked like a maniac on it. And my husband was saying, "Don't you think you should take your time?" I said, "No, I have to do it tonight." I don't know. I was possessed. And I sent it back and she bought it. and wasn't my first book, but to think that Random House bought my first book. And then I remember being in New York because I was there studying at Teachers College for the summer. I had an appointment to meet my editor at Random House. And so I was standing in front of Random House in Midtown Manhattan. I was just shaking. I was so nervous. I could not believe it's like the mothership of publishing houses. And to think, I'm going to start crying. I tell people this, just don't give up on your dreams. I feel very blessed. I love being a teacher. And then my other dream of being a writer, I always thought about Frank McCourt and Angela's Ashes. And, you know, he was older when he first got published. And I remember hearing them saying a school teacher had his first novel and got the Pulitzer Prize. And I thought he was a teacher too. And I, you know, it's very emotional for me because also for my students that I like that I can be a role model for them of whatever they want to be, whether it be a writer, a doctor, an engineer, whatever they want, they can do it and they should never give up.
Who are you anticipating your reader to be? What drove this particular story of the magical adventure?
Well, when I was a child growing up in Yosemite, I have to first say I could not have asked for more amazing parents or my grandfather and great aunt who were a big part of my childhood. And my mother used to walk myself and my older siblings every day in the summer to the river, the Merced River in Yosemite Valley, which was just a hop, skip, and a jump from our house that I grew up in that my great-grandfather built. And we would spend all afternoon on the riverbank. And we'd swim and play, and we would jump in the water and dig in the sand and also just watch nature. And the dragonflies would fly by, and there was a beautiful breeze, and the cottonwoods would flow silvery green leaves, and it was absolutely magical. I can't tell you enough. It's so ingrained in my siblings and myself. And so you're surrounded at the river by all sorts of little tiny creatures. And when you're a child, you're littler. I mean, obviously you're bigger than the creatures, but you're little. And I've always loved fantasy. And so I think it just was in my unconscious that it just sort of came out. And I love riding horses, and the idea of riding a dragonfly and shrinking, and there's fairies involved and jousting with a bee and all kinds of things. These are all the sorts of things I love to read about as a child. So I think somehow fantasy melded it together with nature and my experiences as a child. And of course, I go to visit Yosemite all the time. And I really believe the book came out of that love and of fun. Because I think one thing that's important for children is when they read is to have fun and have a sense of adventure and magic, because I know that's what I love when I read. And so I wanted them to have fun and a sense of magic and an appreciation for the natural world, I think, unconsciously, because afterwards I thought about it and I thought, yeah, that's really what I was trying to accomplish.
I'm now anticipating reading the book because I want to see jousting with a bee. Are you planning to read this with your class? Does your faculty know? Does the faculty know when the book's coming out? I'm just curious what's planned.
Yes, I have told my friends, and I have an amazing group of colleagues, by the way. I want to shout out to them. And I'm all over social media, so I'm not a shy person. And so definitely people know about it. The Goodyear blimp will fly over this whole the day.
Kitty, I ask every teacher to think about what is their walk-up song. And the reason I ask this is because I believe just like athletes and movie stars and major public speakers, when you walk on stage, when you walk into the court, there's walk-up music, right? To amp you up. And I believe every teacher should have walk-up songs playing even if it's in our head as we walk down the hall and we turn into our classroom to start the day.
My father had an Irish pub for a long time, and he used to make me sing ballads in it, much to my horror. I guess I would have to say I'm having trouble thinking of any particular one song, but I love traditional Irish folk music, whether it be a really sad song or a very lively one. So I would say some sort of lilting Irish folk music.
I have been watching and observing you on Twitter because I too love Twitter. I love that I can just put my voice out there. I can retweet. What took you to Twitter and that social platform?
What happened was when I was at Teachers College, I met this very nice woman who told me I had been on Twitter, but I hadn't really used it, that I should join this Twitter chat on Thursday night. It's 8:30 East Coast time, 5:30 West Coast time. It's called Good to Great. And so I did, and it has also changed my life as a teacher. It's this amazing group of educators that talk about issues in education, or they'll feature an author of an educational book, and they will help to co-host this event. And it's completely free. So at most Thursday nights, I join, and they'll have a topic with questions. And it's very exciting because I find out about the latest books in education that are out there. And I made this amazing group of friends on Twitter. And I have helped to facilitate once or twice. And we have a private chat. There's a group of about five or six friends that I met through this chat. And we have a private Twitter chat where we talk almost every day about issues in education. So there's that public chat, the Good to Great chat. And then this group of friends, we call ourselves the Curiosity Crew. And we talk every day about things in education. And it has really provided an amazing community of educators from all over North America. And I highly recommend this for other teachers, this chat, because it keeps you current on what's going on in education. But no one mean or antagonistic has ever popped up on that chat. Everyone is so nice, and I come away very enthused and excited to try new things in my classroom and with other teachers. That is what got me to be more active on Twitter. And then it also is a way to connect in areas you like. I follow different people because of nature or education or people in the children's book community. So you can find your people on Twitter.
That's the whole purpose of community, is the depth and breadth of thought, connections, inspiration, just community in general. If we didn't know how important it was, the pandemic has reminded us that community can be physical space, it can be virtual space, it can be both, but it's just so important. Good to Great, Kitty, what does that mean to you now, 34 years into teaching? What are you still always aspiring to the great with your own practice?
I've always loved the Arthurian legend. And I want to say this is T.H. White that wrote The Once and Future King. And something that Merlin tells the young King Arthur Wart when he's a little boy, and I'm going to paraphrase this, he says, "You're never too old to learn something new," and how that sustains you no matter what age you are in life. And so for me, to always want to learn something new and to be curious is really makes life exciting. So I wish I had that quote in front of me, but I get chills whenever I read it because it's true. And I think I'm hoping that other teachers who may listen to this agree. We're teachers. We always want to learn, just like our students, because if we don't, then what are we doing with students? So I think just that, you don't ever want to stop. And I think that's what keeps me going from my beginning right after finishing at UCLA to now, to keep wanting to learn something new.
I'm trying not to tear up myself, because you reach that age where you're like, okay, 50 is fabulous, but things at 50 plus start making you really think, what mark am I leaving? Have I done enough? What can I still do? Look at me. I'm still here. I still have a lot to give. And this conversation, I don't know why it's hitting me.
Oh.
But it is so important for teachers. And I think it's because last night, Kitty, I was on a session with quite a few kindergarten teachers, and I'm listening to them and I'm watching them and I'm picking up how the urgency of what they're trying to do, and meeting their 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds for the first time. And these are children who've been anticipating coming to school, and they were basically born into a global pandemic.
Yeah.
And so I think it's just everything. And I'm so inspired by just your voice and your conversation. And then I'm looking down at my notes and I'll be completely transparent. I'm reading this quote that my producer, Allie, put down. And she was just like, this is a quote from Kitty. "Because I've taught for so long, many of my students are grown, changing the world, all over the world. I recall the late Krista McCullough quote on why she taught, and this was her response: I touch the future, I teach." And I'm drawn to you and to that quote and everything that's flooding through me as a podcast host, teacher to teacher. I hope that you have an amazing day today.
Oh my gosh, you're making me cry. That's so lovely, Noelle. So lovely.
I hope that my goal and your goal continues to be achieved. But to everyone listening today, if you are thinking about leaving the profession, I hope that this episode gives you a chance to pause, remember your joy, listen to Kitty, and know your intentions are seen, and that's what should continue to drive you. Kitty, thank you so much.
Oh my gosh, thank you, Noelle, and thank you for the team. I'm profoundly humbled, just profoundly humbled by your kindness, and I'm going to start to cry now. Just really profoundly humbled. Thank you.
Hey, listeners, whether we're elementary teachers, middle school or high school teachers, if we're listening to this episode with Kitty, one thing I would encourage us all to take away is to think about our own gardens. Whether it's a physical garden outside of our window, whether it's something that we're cultivating as a community at the school, or whether metaphorically the garden is our students. When you think about where you are today, and you think about your gardens, we may still be in this time of thinking about all the things that we weren't able to do last year because just things were not normal. But let's take a look at it from a new lens, and let's remember that with best practices, with the right intent, and always with the helpful, hopeful heart of a teacher, we're going to be able to have our students blossoming by the end of the school year. Until the next time we're together, your friend, Noelle.
If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the Teachers in America podcast, please email us at shaped@hmhco.com. Be the first to hear new episodes of Teachers in America by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you enjoyed today's show, please rate, review, and share it with your network. You can find the transcript of this episode on our Shaped blog by visiting hmhco.com/shaped. The link is in the show notes. Teachers in America is produced by HMH. Thanks again for listening.